We good? Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I am Mona Pasquill, the Chief Deputy in the Lieutenant Governor's Office, and I am joined today by State Controller John Chung and Tom Sheehy, Chief Deputy Director of the Department of Finance. For the first order of business, I'm requesting Commissioner Sheehy take the gavel so that I may make a motion.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
In deference to Controller Chung, I move that the Controller take over the position of Chair until the first Commission meeting in 2010, at which time the prior Commission action regarding the Chair shall take effect and continue, and the Controller will continue as Chair for the remainder of the year.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any public comment?
We have a motion and a second. Is there any public comment on this matter? Seeing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, your motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the benefit of those in the audience.
Ethan. Oh, thank you very much. For the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission administers property interests owned by the state, including its mineral interests. Today, we will hear proposals concerning the leasing and management of these public property interests. This meeting is a single subject meeting for the PG&E proposed pipeline project, which was originally on the Commission's August agenda. As our August meeting was in Los Angeles, some interested parties asked if the item could instead be heard in Sacramento due to the location of the proposed project, and that is why we are here today. This project has been in process for over 2 years with several local public hearings and workshops. That said, we are also happy to take public comment on other matters during the public comment period before we end today's meeting. The public comment period is always available at any commission meeting, and it is our practice to show that on our agenda. Though inadvertently not shown on the agenda as originally released, staff did add a specific item for public comment as soon as we learned of the oversight. Speakers will have 3 minutes as usual. Now, the first item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's last meeting. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
We have a motion by Mr. Sheehy.
Second.
Second by Acting Lieutenant Governor Pasquill. Is there any objection? Without objection, the motion passes. The next order of business is the Executive Officer's Report. Paul, may we have that report, please?
Certainly. I just wanted to update the Commission on some of the matters that were discussed at the last meeting. In particular, with respect to the Tahoe property owners and the problems with public access there, Commission staff has, at the direction of the Commission, sent a letter to the property owners advising them of what sort of activities the public is allowed to engage in the public trust easement area. So that matter has been clarified. We have been meeting with the AG's office to pursue the restraining order, which the Commission directed that we obtain. This is going to take a little more work than we originally thought, but we are diligently pursuing that, and we hope to have something filed by the next Commission meeting. Parenthetically, of course, we're in a period of time when there's very little public use of the shoreline. It's, of course, supposed to be available to anybody at any time of the year, but there's less up there right now. I also wanted to report that with respect to the enforcement items, just an update that John Asuncion, who manages the Blue Whale Sailing School in the South Bay in San Francisco, has now been served, and BCDC has also taken action on his violations. Our concern specifically is that he has some improvements, some fill and docks on state lands for which he has no lease. These same activities were accomplished without a permit from the Bay Conservation Development Commission, and that entity has now found him in violation and ordered him to either file an application by March, complete application for these activities, or to remove them. Finally, I wanted to discuss a matter which is beginning to get in the press. This has to do with the killing of a blue whale off of the North Coast. Last month, as it turns out, that a surveying ship that was out there surveying, making a map of the ocean bottom, I think as a result of a contract with the Federal National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, but in cooperation with the Ocean Protection Council, this mapping was being undertaken. This kind of activity requires a permit from the State Lands Commission, and in fact, Fugro, the contractor, had such a permit from us. However, that permit requires that there be a marine life observer on the ship, and our understanding of talking with NOAA is that no such observer was on the ship when this collision occurred. And of course, one of the reasons for having this observer there is to prevent conflicts with whales and other marine mammals. So we are pursuing this with great diligence. This is a very serious matter, and I expect to have more details for the commission at its next hearing in December, but in addition to the permit requiring that an observer be on board, the permit requires the applicant to file a report within 30 days should some incident occur, and that 30 days will be up at the end of this week. And so we're conducting our own investigation, but we also want to see what sort of rationale Fugro is going to bring to this incident. And it may very well be, I don't want to prejudge it, but if, in fact, there was no observer and that becomes the most germane fact, we may be, in fact, bringing this matter back to the Commission in December for enforcement action. We could revoke the permit. Interestingly enough, this was not a violation that we contemplated when we brought the recommended legislation to the Commission for next year for its review as to whether or not it wanted to sponsor the different measures that Mario outlined at the last meeting, but would fit squarely within the ambit of one of the enforcement bills that Mario raised, which was that fines could be administratively imposed on a per-day basis. And so if Fugro has not had observers out there, then they're in violation not just for what happened to the whale, but for each day that they haven't had an observer out there, because, of course, the same thing could have happened on any of the other days. Finally, on that particular subject, I'd note that we are sending a letter to Fugro telling them we want to see substantiation from henceforth that an observer is on board. And again, not knowing what the commission might do at a future meeting with its permit, but during the interim, we want to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen again. So we're taking steps to prevent that. Unless there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what was the nature of the permit?
They were doing this low-energy surveying where they were, in effect, sounding something like sonar to map the ocean floor. And this is a big project that the Ocean Protection Council is doing. It seems it's sort of baseline data that's necessary to properly monitor and protect California's coast. So they were in the middle of one of those surveys.
And why does such a survey require a state lands permit?
It's activity, in essence, on state or over state property. It characterizes our land. We normally do not require payment for these permits, but because this activity is occurring on our land, and some of the more intensive energy surveys that have been done in the past had physical impacts to marine life, that sort of thing. And we've generally said, okay, if you want to do that in the future, you need an EIR. So far, no company stepped up to do the EIR. And so presently, the level of surveys are these low energy surveys. Again, we don't charge for them, but we also require that any data that's developed be made available to the commission if we want to use it for whatever purpose we need it.
And so is it because it's a commercial use in state tidelands that it requires a permit? Because not, I mean, like a fishing boat that goes out in state tidelands, the first 3 miles doesn't require a permit, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I'm trying to get my arms around, first of all, obviously it's if they're in violation of their permit, of course, that's of great concern. But I'm just trying to understand the nature of the permit. So why does this type of entity require a permit?
I think it again, the practice started when there was much more intensive surveying being done with greater physical impacts. And so to assure that wouldn't happen, we require permits for those kinds of surveys and specify that only this lower energy be used.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. That's fine. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. We were actually challenged in court over our EIR requirement, and thanks to the AG's defense, won that case. And that concludes the executive officer's report.
Paul, is there any additional action we can take in view of the fact that the whale was killed?
Not at today's meeting, because we didn't know of the absence of an observer until after the notice went out on this. So we don't have it noticed for any action, therefore can't really act. And we need more information before we figure out what the best approach is going to be. But certainly when we have that information, again, one of the potential courses of action the commission can take is to revoke that permit. And so we will be bringing this back to the commission for whatever action the commission wants to take, with as much information as we can get together on that.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Since there are no items on the consent calendar, let's move to the regular agenda, which is Roman numeral 5 on the public agenda. Item 1 is to consider certification of an environmental impact report for the construction of a natural gas transmission pipeline project that would cross Yolo, Sutter, Sacramento, and Placer counties, and an application for a general lease right-of-way use of sovereign lands for the pipeline crossing the Sacramento River. Paul, may we have the staff present, please?
Yes, we're going to have two separate reports, one from Nanette Lee from our land management division, who worked on the lease itself, the other one from Crystal Spur from our environmental unit, where I think most of the discussion is going to be focused today, who coordinated the environmental impact report presentation.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Nanette Lee, and I'm a staff member of the Commission's Land Management Division. Today's presentation by staff for the application will provide an overview for the PG&E Line 406-407 Natural Gas Pipeline Project and the environmental process leading to the revised final environmental impact report, as well as the application submitted by PG&E for the portion of the project that would cross sovereign lands under the Commission's jurisdiction. I will be providing you with information regarding the proposed right-of-way lease associated with the proposed project. PG&E has submitted an application to the Commission for the use of state sovereign lands for the construction, use, operation, and maintenance of a 30-inch diameter natural gas pipeline that is proposed to cross the Sacramento River in Sutter and Yolo counties. The slide shown on the screen shows the crossing in the lower frame, and it's also shown on the large exhibit. The red arrow points right to the crossing. The pipeline is a part of the overall project that involves the construction of lines 406 and 407 and a new distribution feeder beginning in Yolo County, north of Esparto, and continuing east to the city of Roseville. Lines 406 and 407 will provide greater capacity to deliver reliable natural gas service to existing customers within the Sacramento Valley region, and will also extend service to planned development in the region. A combination of construction techniques will be used to install the new pipeline, including conventional trenching, horizontal directional drilling, HDD, and conventional boring techniques. The Sacramento River crossing will be completed using HDD construction methods for approximately 1,400 feet in length and at a minimum depth of 60 feet beneath the bed of the river. The proposed lease area is a 50-foot wide right-of-way that is approximately 550 feet long. The lease contains various provisions as to how the pipeline will be constructed and maintained during the lease term, and also provides and also includes provisions requiring the pipeline to be constructed and tested to meet or exceed U.S. Department of Transportation construction and safety standards, which are intended to protect the public and to prevent natural gas facility accidents and failures, and compliance with the Hazardous Spill Prevention and Contingency Plan. Once constructed, the pipeline must be operated, inspected, and maintained in accordance with all applicable federal and state regulations. As the lead agency under the California Environmental Quality Act, the Commission has the responsibility of ensuring that the applicant will comply with the mitigation monitoring and reporting program for the entire project. The proposed lease contains language that acknowledges the Commission's authority to monitor and enforce the mitigation monitoring program and includes specific requirements outlined in the mitigation measures. The lease also contains specific provisions that outline the level of commission staff involvement in the engineering review, construction, operation, maintenance, and inspection process, beginning at the design pre-construction phase through the post-construction operational phase of the pipeline. In addition, the lease requires PG&E to provide financial responsibility based on the scope of the project, which includes the following: liability insurance coverage of no less than $10 million, a lease performance bond in the amount of $50,000, a construction performance bond, which needs to be submitted prior to the start of construction in an amount equal to the construction costs for the portion of the pipeline that crossed sovereign lands, and a performance bond in the amount of $400,000 as security for the construction mitigation monitoring program for the project. In summary, you have before you the action to consider the issuance of a general lease right-of-way use to PG&E for the construction, use, operation, and maintenance of the portion of the pipeline that would cross state sovereign lands located in the Sacramento River. Crystal Spur of the Commission's Environmental Planning and Management Division will provide you with an overview of the environmental process leading to the revised final environmental impact report and the actions to be considered under the California Environmental Quality Act. Commission staff as well as representatives from PG&E are available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Crystal Spur, and I'm a staff environmental scientist with the Division of Environmental Planning and Management. And I'm here to give you a brief overview of the proposed PG&E Line 4647 natural gas pipeline project and the environmental impact report that was prepared for the project. Oops. It's kind of light, but it gives you an overview of the pipeline. There's a 30-inch natural gas pipeline running from, as Ninette had pointed out, from an area in Yolo County north of Esparto to the city of Roseville. And then there's a 10-inch distribution feeder main that runs north and south through a portion of Sutter County and a portion of Sacramento County. The proposed project consists of the construction and operation of approximately 40 miles of pipeline and 6 above-ground facilities in Yolo County, Sacramento, and Sutter and Placer counties. The pipeline would be designed at a maximum allowable operating pressure of 975 pounds per square inch gauge. The pipeline wall thickness varies from 0.375 inch to 0.635 inch, depending on the class area where the pipeline is located. There are three different segments of pipeline, and the first segment is called Line 406, and it's approximately 40 miles of the 30-inch pipeline in Yolo County. Then there's Line 407, which is approximately 25 miles of 30-inch pipeline that extends through Sutter and Placer counties to the city of Roseville. And then we've got the distribution feeder main, which is approximately 2.5 miles of 10-inch pipeline. The six fenced above-ground pressure-limiting, pressure-regulating, metering, and mainline valve stations would be constructed along the entire project alignment, and they would ensure the proper pressures are maintained in the transmission system to reduce the pressure of the gas before delivering it to the distribution pipeline system. Here is showing the locations of the stations. They're in blue. There are six of them, and then there's one existing shown there at the eastern end in near the city of Roseville. The land requirements for the entire project include a 100-foot wide temporary easement area used for construction trenching, soil storage, installation, testing, and backfill. Within that 100-foot wide temporary easement is a 50-foot wide permanent easement that would remain to allow maintenance of the pipeline. The permanent easement would prohibit the planting of deep-rooted plants such as trees and vines within 10 feet of the pipeline center line. So that's a 20-foot wide stretch of the permanent easement that would prohibit the planting of deep-rooted crops such as orchards and vineyards. But other types of crops, such as row crops and field crops, could continue to be planted along within that 20-foot easement on top of the pipeline. I'm going to go through the aerial photographs. This is showing the types of land uses along the project pipeline. And that's the distribution feeder main. Now I'm going to give you an overview of the environmental impact report. During the preparation of the EIR for this project, we followed the CEQA requirements. We mailed and placed in three newspapers all required notices. We held scoping meetings, had a 45-day public review period on the draft EIR. We held public meetings to hear comments on the draft EIR. We then prepared and released a revised final EIR for public review on October 30th, 2009, for 15 days prior to this commission meeting. The EIR provides analysis of the proposed project's impacts on 14 resource areas. The impacts were found in nine of those resource areas, and they're listed there. I'm not going to read them. We also looked at environmental justice and cumulative effects. Technical studies and data supporting the analysis are included as appendices to the EIR. We received 25 comment letters on the draft EIR. We then received 11 late comment letters from local agencies, special districts, development groups, and landowners. 13 landowners and provided comments on the draft EIR during our public review meetings held in Roseville and Woodland. Concerns raised in the letters and public meetings included land use issues regarding farmland, risk of upset of the pipeline near planned developments and schools, potential conflicts with water wells and irrigation systems, potential conflicts with other utilities in the permanent easement, adverse impacts to Swainson's hawk and other avian species, authority of the CDFG regarding biological impacts of projects, and also to make sure that we looked at alternatives to the project. All these issues were addressed in the revised final EIR, which included comments, the comment letters and responses to those comments and any revisions that we made to the draft EIR. Project mitigation, we looked at the project mitigation through three different avenues, through project design, the applicant proposed measures, and then mitigation measures. I'm going to go through some of the design features that were included as a part of the project to reduce the project impacts. Potential biological impacts were reduced through giant garter snake and Swainson's hawk avoidance using construction timing, utilization of the HDD or horizontal directional drilling technologies to cross beneath large waterways, wetlands, and vernal pools. The potential risk of upset hazards were reduced through increasing pipeline wall thickness beyond the regulations in order to add strength to the pipeline, welding all pipeline sections together without ends overlapping, performing radiographic inspections of welds, corrosion monitoring, and inspections testing pipeline protocols and leak surveys were also included in the project description. Pipeline regulations require 3 feet of soil cover, and the project as proposed would install the pipeline with 5 feet of soil cover. This would provide increased protection from third-party damage. 5 feet should be sufficient to eliminate threats from most agricultural operations. Excavations in excess of this depth present additional construction challenges due to the need for trench benching and shoring, bringing in OSHA standards for worker entry. We received a comment letter during the draft EIR review period from the Yolo County Farm Bureau, which states, quote, "We appreciate that PG&E has decided to bury the pipeline under 5 feet of dirt. This provides safety for agricultural operations above the pipeline," end quote. This letter supports the position that 5 feet of soil cover is adequate for most farming operations. But again, that would not include the deep-rooted crops such as trees and vines. There were measures for temporary loss of agriculture uses also included in the project description. Topsoil and subsoil would be stockpiled separately and replaced after backfill. All work areas would be graded and restored to pre-construction contours within days of trench backfilling. Soils would be decompacted and reseeded by PG&E in accordance with the landowner's requests. Following restoration, the agricultural production could resume. The next avenue that we looked at were applicant proposed measures, and these are measures implemented by PG&E to avoid environmental impacts during construction and operation. These measures are included in the mitigation monitoring program so that we can monitor them and make sure that they are implemented. If when the project design features and the applicant proposed measures weren't adequate to address the impacts of the project, then we required additional mitigation measures. The majority of the significant impacts were mitigated to less than significant through project design features, the applicant proposed measures, and additional mitigation measures provided in the revised final EIR. I'm going to go through a little bit about why we needed to revise the final EIR. We originally prepared a final EIR and released it for public review on July 27, 2009. After release of the final EIR, we realized that the risk analysis had aggregate risk incorrectly reported as individual risk. We prepared the revised final EIR and released it for public review in order to provide the agencies and public details regarding the clarifications made to the risk analysis. This revised final EIR supersedes and replaces the final EIR that was previously released for public review in July 2009. The earlier version of the risk assessment that was completed for the proposed project included risk measurement terminology that was not defined in the document, and this has resulted in some confusion. The aggregate risk was presented in the risk assessment erroneously as individual risk. Therefore, the draft EIR incorrectly compared the calculated aggregate risk to the threshold for individual risk. I'm going to define both individual risk and aggregate risk. The individual risk relates to the risk to an individual at a specific location. And this is what most people want to know. They want to know, I live here, or I work here, or I go to school here, and what is the risk to me from the pipeline? Individual risk is defined as the frequency that an individual may be expected to sustain a certain level of harm from the realization of specific hazards at a specific location within a specified time interval. The risk level is typically determined for the maximally exposed individual, and that would be someone located directly over the pipeline and that they're present continuously 24 hours per day, 365 days per year. The aggregate risk represents the anticipated annual likelihood of fatalities from all of the project components combined, which includes approximately 40 miles of pipeline and six stations. Aggregate risk has no known thresholds and is not used in practice to determine individual risk. The draft EIR did correctly state that a commonly accepted individual risk threshold is an annual likelihood of fatality of 1 in 1 million. This threshold is used by the California Department of Education in their school siting analyses. And they calculate individual risk and they apply it to this threshold. When we did the calculations for the revised final EIR, all the risks associated with all of the pipeline components were less than the threshold of 1 in 1 million. Therefore, the risk is considered to be less than significant. Even though the project risk of upset impacts are less than significant, we included mitigation measures to further reduce the risks of project upset because of the school sites and developments along the pipeline. Those mitigation measures are post-construction inspection to locate any construction-related dents, baseline internal inspection with a high-resolution instrument within the first 6 months of placing the pipeline into operation, internal inspections at a minimum of every 7 years after the baseline inspection to look for corrosion of defects, the installation of automatic shutdown valves at all six stations, and coordinating with local agencies regarding the horizontal and vertical clearances required between utility crossings and the pipeline. Just to give you an idea of the risk that was calculated, line 406 pre-mitigation individual risk is 1 in 2,137,000, and after mitigation, it reduced the risk to approximately 50% of that, which is 1 in 4,274,000. For line 407, the individual risk is 1 in 2,062,000 pre-mitigation, and post-mitigation, the individual risk is 1 in 4,115,000. The line DFM, pre-mitigation individual risk is 1 in 4,255,000, and post-mitigation individual risk is 1 in 8,475,000. While most of the impacts associated with the project were mitigated to less than significant levels, the EIR did identify two Class 1 impacts related to construction air quality. And both of these impacts relate to reactive organic gases. Reactive organic gases and oxides of nitrogen, which is NOx, are ozone precursors that react in the atmosphere in the presence of sunlight to form ozone, and that's why they're important emissions. The two significant and unavoidable impacts after implementation of all feasible mitigation are: construction of the project would result in an exceedance of significance thresholds for ROG as established by local air pollution control districts, and therefore the exceedance of ROG thresholds would result in construction emissions and substantially contribute to exceedance of state and federal ambient air quality standards. We did have four mitigation measures to reduce these air emissions. NOx was reduced to less than significant, but ROG was not. Therefore, these impacts would be significant. These are, it's kind of hard to see, but these were alternatives considered and eliminated from full evaluation. And I'm going to briefly go through these to tell you why we eliminated them from evaluation. Line 406, 407, northern alternative, which is the green alternative. It is longer than the proposed project by approximately 11 miles. It was eliminated due to increased biological impacts, increased agricultural impacts, more water crossings, and increased seismic fault issues to the Dunnigan Hills area. Line 406 central alternative, which is the red, is two miles longer than the proposed project. It was eliminated due to increased biological impacts, increased seismic fault issues to the Dunnigan Hills area. Line 407 southern alternative is the purple. It would include more water crossings, including Steelhead Creek and Cache Creek. It was eliminated due to increased biological impacts, increased risks to people due to being constructed through the suburban communities of North Natomas and Alberta. And then there's one that is not on here, and it's called the Systems Facility Alternative, which would consist of 15 separate projects installing multiple smaller diameter pipelines. These are route options that were analyzed in the EIR. We analyzed the no project alternative as well as 12 route options. And what we did was we took a segment of the pipeline, and that's where the option would differ from the segment. The impacts of the proposed project would not be associated with the no project alternative. The no project alternative would not meet the project objectives. Continued growth in Yolo, Sutter, Sacramento, and Placer counties would put further strain on existing natural gas infrastructure and could result in emergency restriction or interruption of services if the proposed project is not constructed. I'm going to briefly go through all of those 12 options. Each option represented a particular segment of the alignment that differed in location from the proposed project. And we attempted to by looking at these different route options, we attempted to reduce some of the impacts of the proposed project. None of these route options did eliminate or reduce to less than significant the Class 1 air quality, construction air quality impacts. There are trade-offs with each option as compared to the proposed routes. The magnitude of some of the impacts were reduced, while some remained the same or were made worse. Option A and Option B, which are red and blue, run along the same alignment for a certain period of time, and then they break off. Option A, which is red, increases the length of the pipeline by 2,200 feet. Option B increases the length of the pipeline by 2,240 feet. These options would extend through the edges of many agricultural fields, increasing the magnitude of impacts to agricultural lands due to the increased length, including existing vineyards and orchards along those routes. They would result in a reduction in the magnitude of some of the temporary construction impacts. Both of these options would place the pipeline in close proximity to Durst Organic Farms, potentially creating a new high-consequence area because of the number of employees and the number of days that they would be working near the pipeline. It would fall within this area that was calculated. It's called a high-consequence area, and we calculate an area based on the U.S. Department of Transportation requirements, and that area was calculated to be 646 feet from the pipeline, and there's a radius that shows where most of the people would be at risk if they congregated. Option C, which is dark green, it increases the length of the pipeline by 1,150 feet. It would move the pipeline from the middle of agricultural fields to the edges of those same fields, It would increase the number of trees impacted. There would be no reduction in the magnitude of any impacts. Option D, which is light green, increases the length of the pipeline by 860 feet. This again would move the pipeline from the middle of agricultural fields to the edges of those fields along County Road 17. It would increase the number of trees impacted and move the pipeline closer to residences along the road. There would be no reduction in the magnitude of any of the impacts. Option E, which is yellow, increases the length of the pipeline by 3,480 feet. It would move the pipeline from the middle of agricultural fields to the edges of the agricultural lands across the street along County Road 19. This would increase the number of trees impacted. It would result in impacts to an existing orchard across the street, and it would move the pipeline closer to some of the residences along the road. Alternative F is maroon. It would not alter the length of the pipeline, would reduce the magnitude of impacts to trees, but would increase the magnitude of impacts to biological resources by bordering a drainage with adjacent wetlands. Option G would not alter the length of the pipeline, but would move the pipeline from the middle of an agricultural field to the edge of that field. It would increase the number of trees impacted and move the pipeline closer to one residence. Option H is gold, and it would move the pipeline in a more direct route through the Yolo Bypass, but it would result in greater impacts to biological resources. Now, options I, J, K, and L, on the eastern end toward in Placer County, were considered due to potential land use conflicts associated with school siting requirements that require school districts to perform a risk analysis when a school site is located within 1,500 feet of an easement for an underground pipeline. The Center Joint Unified School District has two planned schools near the pipeline. The risk analysis that was completed for the proposed project indicates that impacts are very minor at distances 800 to 1,000 feet at this or greater. At this distance from the pipeline, the consequences from a potential fire or explosion are not expected to result in any injuries. Option I, which is turquoise, routes the pipeline through agricultural fields approximately 1,550 feet from the planned high school site to move the pipeline outside of the California Department of Education study zone, 1,500-foot study zone. Option J is pink, and it routes the pipeline 2,600 feet from the planned high school site, but moves the pipeline close to several residences. Option K routes the pipeline 150 feet into land that includes a wetland, vernal pool, and giant garter snake habitat. This option would move the pipeline 1,550 feet from a planned elementary school, which is proposed to be located approximately 1,400 feet from the pipeline. Option L would place the pipeline within the proposed alignment for Line 407, but would be located within the 1,500-foot Department of Education study zone for the planned elementary school. This option would use the extension of a planned HED to place a pipeline at a depth of 35 feet to reduce the risk of third-party damage. With this option, PG&E has proposed to jointly develop a risk analysis with the school district to determine if there would be any pipeline impacts to the school. Staff recommends approval of the environmentally superior alternative, which includes the proposed project as modified by options I and L. This would increase safety to the two nearby planned schools within the Center Joint Unified School District. Here's option I, which routes it 1,550 feet from a planned high school site that's supposed to be located on the south side of that of the road. And this is option L, which would just extend an existing HDD, but increase the cover of the pipeline to 35 feet to reduce third-party incidents. What you have, these are the commission actions that you have before you. Staff recommends the following actions: certify the revised final EAR, adopt the mitigation monitoring program, which is Exhibit C to the calendar item, adopt the findings for each of the impacts of the project, Exhibit D to the calendar item, adopt the statement of overriding considerations for the significant and unavoidable construction air quality impacts, which is Exhibit E to the calendar item, approve the environmentally superior alternative as modified by options I and L, and then issue a general lease right-of-way use to PG&E for the construction, use, operation, and maintenance of the portion of the pipeline that will cross state sovereign lands located in the Sacramento River. That ends my presentation, and I'm available for any to answer any questions.
Tom.
Great. Thank you very much.
Jay, if I put my dark sunglasses on, I might have gotten away with it. Thank you very much for thorough presentation. How does the what is the legal authority? I'm sure there's something, must be something in the code for utilities when they need general right of way to go across the farm lines. How does that work?
Across the state lands?
No, it's just in general. They're going. Most of this pipeline's going across private property. I'm just wondering, how does that? What is it in law that gives any utility that authority to do that?
Well, we haven't been directly involved in that with PG&E. They, by negotiation, they can certainly acquire these easements, and if a necessity, they can. I believe they have authority to condemn.
They are a public utility and do have the power of eminent domain if they need to use it.
But typically there would be perhaps some sort of negotiation between the utility and the private property owners.
It's usually cheaper than litigating.
For that, what's that?
It's usually cheaper than litigating, yes, if you negotiate a acquisition, right?
And then in those types of situations, do the private landowners get compensated for the easement? I mean, I don't know if these soil types would be conducive to a vineyard or tree crops. It depends on the soil type. But
yes,
get compensated?
Whether, as I understand it, there's both temporary easements here for construction as well as permanent easements, and that should go into the evaluation of what the damages are or the reduction in reduction in value of the properties.
I see. And for the stretch of pipeline that we've been looking at in the staff presentation, what type of crops are currently being cultivated there?
I believe mostly row crops, if any, and very few, was it 2 acres or something of actual root crops, I believe.
And Crystal, did you have any other?
It's mainly row and field crops, and there are 2 acres of orchards that will be impacted, that will not be able to be replanted.
There's 2 acres of orchard they have to pull
within,
out?
Within all four counties. So, yeah.
I see.
They have to pull out.
Okay, that's all I had at this time, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Very good.
I have a question.
Yes.
With the pipeline that'll be under the river, 60 feet, at least 60 feet under the bed of the river, are there other locations that we have such a pipeline going through the rivers, and have there been any problems?
We've generally not. We have a number of other places where pipelines cross the river, and it includes everything from sewage pipelines to gas or electrical conduits. So it's something that's done fairly frequently, and we generally don't have problems. The biggest problem that we'd want to be careful about and would probably have some staff on site monitoring for would be what's called frack outs, where as the directional drilling is occurring, the mud that's used as part of that drilling process is sometimes under pressure and can force its way up through the layers and get into the water. And so there's engineering techniques to help prevent that from happening, but you also want to monitor to make sure that doesn't happen.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have 10 individuals who have signed up for comment on this particular item. 3 minutes maximum for each comment. Let me begin with Patrick Markham. Following Patrick will be Bill Dibble. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Patrick Markham. I represent Bonnie and Howard Lopez. I'm an attorney, and so 3 minutes is a challenge for me, so I'll do the best I can. I've submitted an objection, and I'm not going to go through it line and verse, but maybe what I could do is summarize the idea of it. And that is that on October 30th, a revised report came out which reduced the impacts from significant to less than significant based upon terminology, as indicated by staff. However, after that period of time, there was not a public comment, an agency comment period of 45 days like there normally would be after the first draft came out. And my concern about that is this. Is that when you go into the recommendations themselves, you find that, for example, the argument for having the easement on the bisecting the fields, as opposed to on the edge of the fields, in part has to do with the risk analysis. In other words, if we leave the easement in the middle of a field, the thought is that we're further away from a population. But now, as I understand the revised analysis, there is no significant risk, and if there's no significant risk, then those alternatives are equal, and so you've taken away the differentiation. And so what I'm arguing for today is simply that we put this revised final EIR out for public comment and agency comment again with respect to that change, because I think the public and the agencies have a right to, under CEQA, to comment upon that. And as I pointed out in my objection, CEQA does not require recirculation of the report if it simply amplifies or clarifies a point. But as you can see, when you move from having a significant risk to having a less significant risk based upon this new terminology, you've really changed the risk analysis entirely, but you're not recirculating it as is required by CEQA. And so what I'm addressing right now is simply the certification process that we've gone through here. I think that the public and the agencies need further comments. And I can tell you, I've at this point, I believe, had about 7 days to look at this project, so I personally can tell you that I haven't had enough time to be able to do any comments. And that's not the commission's problem. That's when it came to me. But I can also say that this report came out on October 30th, so had it come to me the very day it came out and was handed to me, the opportunity to really have significant, meaningful comments is nil, basically. Let's see, the other issues that I'd like to bring up, and I was really making notes of this as we were going along. Yes, there was some discussion by staff regarding the length of the various options and whether or not the length of those options had greater or lesser impact on the environment. And there, I'll just sum up with, it seems to be that the conclusion is if it's a longer pipeline option, then it's going to have a greater impact, but the EIR really doesn't analyze that. It simply says it as a conclusion. So with that, my objections are set forth in writing, and I would appreciate you consider those. There's about 8 of them, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Markham. Mr. Dipple? Followed by Donald E. Wilson.
I'd like to thank Mr. Sheehy for getting the meeting changed in L.A. The staff told me that meeting could not be changed, and I want to thank you personally for changing that meeting. My neighbor, Mr. Chung, is an organic farmer also. I have brought that up to the staff. They weren't even aware that he was an organic farmer. This goes right through one of his fields, and it goes right next to his packing, where he packs his organic vegetables. No mention at all in the environmental impact. It was all about the DIRS and nothing about Mr. Chung. And I only have a few minutes, so you mentioned about the money we were going to get from PG&E. I want to thank them for offering me $154 a year to ruin my land. That's it.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I would like to thank you for making this meeting available where people like the school district and other residents could participate. There will be other people that cover other issues, so I just want to say I'm here on behalf of the taxpayers in our school district. The reason why is we're in the center of planning and where this pipeline's going to go. It's actually going to go through Sierra Vista. It's not going to go through Placer Vineyards, but we've already authorized, we already have a $500 million bond authorization because we're in the center of where development in the next 15 to 20 years is going to take place, including Placer Vineyards, Curry Creek, the Drexel University project, and numerous others. I'm not going to bore you with all of them. But the reason why that's important is what's happened in the economy lately. We lost 3.1% in assessment district-wide last year. Some of the bonds that were authorized have already been sold. As you look at the models going 15, 20 years out, there were certain assumptions of how many properties would be built, how the people in those properties would then pay back the bond. I mean, I'm sure you guys are well aware of bonds, given the positions you sit in. And Placer Vineyards, which is, for lack of a better term, our cash cow, now put back to 2024. And the reason why I bring that up is we already have decreased assessed valuation. Our biggest projects are already being delayed. This is going to go right through our second or third project that's now going to come up that the taxpayers of our district are relying on to pay those bonds back. Now, I've bought a home. I'm sure all of you have. If you put a high pressure gas pipeline right through a lot of those homes, that's only going to further, because my understanding, what we've been told, is homes only have to be 20 feet. Schools might have to be 1,500 feet, but schools only have to be 20 feet. And as a realtor gets into disclosure, you can't tell me that's not going to drop the price of those homes. So we've already taken a hit and a decrease in assessed valuation. we're going to take our taxpayers are going to take a second hit in the fact that now Placer Vineyards will not be able to contribute to the payback of the bonds that we've already sold. So if we now go about pulling some homes out or decreasing the sell value of some of the homes that are already there, that's only going to be a third hit. And I know that it's not your guys' problem, so to say, but I just felt that I needed to come here today and bring that up. I mean, Placer Vineyards is part of the SACOG plan. By the time we get to the end of the development, all of these developments are going to be part of smart growth. What we're talking about here, we're talking about taxpayers, we're talking about smart growth. The pipeline will actually affect our schools and the Placer Vineyards, which I realize is a way off, but one of the things I've pushed for in my time on the board, because something that is a voluntary cost that costs a lot to school districts, is busing. We've tried to place our school sites where we won't have to bus a lot of kids so we can put more dollars in the classroom rather than more dollars into buses and fixing them up and making them last as long as they can. So we're talking about safe, and we're a very rural district. So if we're now going to be developing a far north development rather than a southern one, that's going to create even more need for busing if we don't have things, if we don't have our sites in the right place. So from a taxpayer point of view, we could get hit on school buses. We could get hit on assessed valuation. If we have to move our schools too far, that's going to create more busing in the district. So just from a taxpayer point of view, I would like to see the line go around the district rather than through it.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We have Matt Friedman, followed by Elizabeth Heary or Hickey.
Have copies for Thank you, Commissioners. I am Matt Friedman. By profession, I'm a senior transportation planner, and I'm an elected trustee of the Center Joint Unified School District and its immediate past president, having been followed by my friend Donald Wilson. Today, however, I speak as a citizen. I reviewed the EIR for the natural gas transmission line. I commend PG&E for its forward thinking in anticipation of future growth. The availability of quality utility services is crucial for sustained community and economic growth. It is that same concern for quality and sustained growth that prompts my comments before you today. The proposed alignment would impact the location of schools in the vicinity of Baseline Road in Placer County due to the safety requirement of a 1,500-foot buffer on both sides of the proposed pipeline. This would have immediate impacts for the planning of school facilities as well as other planning efforts. Therefore, for reasons I will present, I am strongly urging you to consider option K for the alignment of the pipeline. The presence of a high-pressure gas pipeline would create a swath of land over a half a mile wide that would be unavailable for school sites. As it is, the determination of school sites is a process that is more restrictive than any other land use decision. This additional restriction would only increase the severity of restrictions. This is not in the best interest of quality, sustained growth. A key element to good neighborhood design is safe access to nearby schools that encourage biking and walking, as Mr. Wilson mentioned. Creating further restrictions to school site determination increases the likelihood that distances to schools will be increased. In addition, the narrowing of site choices will make it less likely that factors such as creating attendance boundaries that will avoid requiring students to cross major arterial roadways will be diminished. The end result will be school sites that do not serve communities well. In addition, this will place a greater burden upon the school district and parents to provide transportation for students. This will lead to greater congestion, air pollution, and decreased youth fitness. There are also issues that extend beyond the need of schools. The proposed alignment will affect many years of hard work to develop the specific plans for Placer Vineyards, Sierra Vista, Curry Creek, and other areas that will form the bulk of the new growth for South Placer County. These proposed developments have gone through numerous rounds of environmental review and planning for over 15 years to create plans for the many thousands of homes, hundreds of businesses, and many social, cultural, and civic facilities that will be established and built in South Placer County. The current alignment will send a shockwave of disruption to these planning efforts and the many years and millions of dollars spent in those efforts. Option K poses the least disruptions to these efforts, and I strongly urge you to consider its adoption. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Heary. I'm an attorney here today representing the Center Joint Unified School District. The pipeline is a matter of grave concern to the Center Joint Unified School District, and as a result, there are several individuals here who you've already heard from. Two board members from the district. We also have the superintendent here and an assistant superintendent. The location of the pipeline in connection with the school sites is a matter of serious concern, not only financially for the district, but because it's a question of health and safety for students and other individuals who may be working at the school or visiting the school site. We have previously commented about the environmental impact report and noted that further studies are needed. We reiterate that here for the record. With respect to the alternatives that have been discussed today, the district prefers alternative J, which would place the pipeline even further from the high school than alternative I. For this reason, it is highly preferable. With regard to the elementary school site, this is a very difficult situation. The best alternative would be alternative K, which would place the pipeline further than the 1,500 foot buffer zone for a gas pipeline from the school district. And there's good reason for that buffer zone. I'm sure that the Department of Education has recognized that if there were a fire or an explosion and there were children present, the results could be catastrophic. They could be tragic beyond words. With regard to alternative L, the idea of placing the pipeline 35 feet deep, we don't know whether this risk analysis that's been proposed would result in a finding that the site was suitable for students. It's also going to put in a terrific burden on the school district. PG&E ought to be paying for the entire risk analysis if that's going to be done, and any measures that are deemed necessary as a result of such a risk analysis. School district simply doesn't have money for this type of alternative and has spent years and great sums of money to date working through the planning process with Placer County, with the developers and other entities. And for PG&E to come in at this point and throw this monkey wrench into the system is very difficult. I want to say one quick thing. There's also been a suggestion that the school district site could be swapped with a nearby park. We don't know whether this would work at all, and we don't think that this should be an excuse for placing the pipeline in the currently proposed location. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Alisa Stevens, followed by Norpal Mara Yang.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I would like to request that you allow me to speak for more than 3 minutes. I wasn't aware of the time limitation. I need to discuss an alternative route, why that the project may not be timely to go forward at all.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me if we were to grant her wish on more than 3 minutes, we should go back and grant more time to all the people that preceded her.
Yes, it's the will of the...
There are only 10 speakers, so it would seem that there is enough time for people to be able to speak their mind. Okay. I have prepared some... Okay, again, my name is Alisa Stevens. I'm a fifth generation from Yolo County and third generation to own our family farm in western Yolo County in the Hungry Hollow area near Esparto. It's located on Road 88A, and it would be really helpful if we could have the slide, is that possible, that shows the alternate routes?
Yes. I can either do the full sign or I can do
the Western Yolo County. Okay. Do we have a...
Well, that's not true. No. Excuse me, Madam Chair. It'd be on the record as long as...
She's on the... That's true. He's just he's concerned about the webcasting.
Well, there's a difference between the webcasting and on the record.
That's
so
true.
Let's not prevent our witness from doing what she needs to do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just voicing my opinion on the matter. Can you hear the witness if she's at that board? Okay, so that's not an issue.
And I think the reason the AGP rep mentioned that is that at least one of the agencies that he works with, not this one, has formally adopted the webcast as,
as their record.
So, but
yeah.
Commissioner
Shee
is absolutely correct. That's not the case here.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. No, I can't use that. Our parcel, our family farm is small. It's only 58.5 acres.
It may be because you've, the screen is in the front of it.
So you catch it with your finger, like that.
There you go.
Okay.
Oh, great. Thanks.
This is our parcel right here. You can see the blue line is the proposed pipeline. And our parcel is these two pieces right on each side of Road 88A, right where I have the pointer right now, the laser pointer, is our farmhouse. Along the northern boundary are at least 10 eucalyptus trees, which are nesting habitat for Swainson's hawks and owls, et cetera. And then there's two eucalyptus trees right down here that provide the same thing. My grandfather, Floris Mast, purchased the farm in 1924, and it's been owned by our family ever since then. The farmhouse, as well as outbuildings, are on that 58.5 acres. It is prime agricultural land planted in irrigated row crops, such as tomatoes and sunflowers, as well as alfalfa. There's been a little bit of discussion about 2 acres of orchard, but there is a lot of row crops and other shallow-rooted crops that people's parcels are being bisected by this, by this pipeline. Right from over here where it jogs down from going along Road 17, it starts bisecting all the way over to the Interstate Highway 505, probably at least, I'd say, 10 parcels of people's family farms. So our irrigation and the others runs from north to south, and of course the pipeline would bisect right through, right traverse it, right east to west. So I am requesting that you vote for the no project alternative, which would be the environmentally and agriculturally superior alternative. There have been many different concerns expressed about the pipeline. But I question, under the no-project alternative, even the very necessity at this time. This project started in 2007 when, of course, Western Placer County was booming with development. Things have drastically changed since then as a result of the recession and development in western Placer County has come to almost a standstill, with many of the homes and new developments being foreclosed on. Another factor is the current strong growth in solar energy and the movement to decrease our dependence on oil, electricity, and natural gas, which I argue makes the alleged need for additional natural gas being transported across four counties an unnecessary and outdated concept at this time anyway. My particular family's opposition is that the pipeline would devastate our small farm. Since it is only 58.5 acres, I don't know how familiar you are with agriculture, but it's difficult already for us to farm and make that economically viable. Many tenant farmers would not even consider farming such a small parcel. The pipeline bisects our two parcels about two-thirds of the way down, effectively cutting it into four smaller pieces. If it is installed as proposed, cutting through these sections of cropland, I believe our farm may no longer be economically viable to operate at all. A second major concern to us is that we would never be able to plant our land to orchards or vineyards. Currently, there is one almond orchard and a vineyard about 2 miles away from us, and of course the R.H. Phillips vineyard, which is huge, is probably only seven, 8 miles away from us. So it is land that is being developed more and more into almond orchards and vineyards.
Ms. Stevens, are you able to condense the remainder of your comments with your sort of main remaining points, maybe? And if you have it, I see if you have it in writing, we'd be happy to take that too.
Okay, I will condense it. My main argument is that I'm arguing if there is any alternative that is to be approved, and that the least impact to the cropland and others would be option A. This runs basically along County Road 16, and the only negative thing that's been said about it is that it adds some 2,200 feet to the pipeline, but essentially, it would not negatively affect any cropland, any orchard, or any vineyard. It does run, it has not been discussed in the report at all where on County Road 16 it would be located. If you located it on the south side of County Road 16, it would avoid the Durst Organic Farm. It would avoid one small almond orchard on the on 16 and the one vineyard on the north side of 16.
Okay.
Looking really quickly at my photos.
We have your photos here. Were you at the what were the meetings that were held for the I forget what they were called technically.
EIR.
I did make a public comment at the one in Roseville. I didn't have the photos at that time.
Okay.
But from the photos you can see that the small Road 16 has basically the smallest amount of population in under any of the alternatives. The one orchard on the south and the vineyard on the north can easily be avoided, taking out any vineyard or orchard because they're set so far back from the rural roadway. All of the cropland is set very far back from the rural roadway, and I believe that dual easements between the County of Yolo and PG&E could be accomplished, which would basically double up where the county would need to maintain their road and PG&E, which would minimize the impact on cropland. You can see there's one other small house, and basically it's wide open. There's hardly anything up there, and it can all be avoided by putting the easement down the south side of Road 16. Once you get under the I-505, you're into basically nothing that's being tilled or cropland. Then it goes across the Dunnigan Hills, over across to the river and Placer County. I'm not speaking to the route in Placer County, but I think that the commission should really consider the effect on the small family farm. I just think it will totally devastate our farm, and there are viable alternatives by not crossing the farmland, by going along existing roads, which the EIR said was supposed to be one of the goals of the route, and I don't think it has been considered properly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, question of staff or
Sure. Of course, the BDIR. Mm-hmm. Please come.
Who should I address it to as a question about the impact?
Perhaps Crystal Spur could respond.
Sorry about that. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm not doing that on purpose. I apologize. Question for staff regarding the EIR. So I heard with listened with great interest to our last witness, and of course I'm sympathetic to the situation of farmers, but if the line's being buried 5 feet, I'm having a hard time seeing, other than the obvious disruption during construction, once that trench is buttoned back up, when we talk about farm operations like disking, plowing, even if they were to go through with the big shank and rip the ground, usually farmers don't ever rip that deep, in my experience, that 5 feet is way below the level that would be have any sort of permanent impact on their operations. What am I missing?
No, that's correct. They can continue to farm over the pipeline except for orchards and vineyards, and that's only a 20-foot restriction. It's not the entire acreage of land. It's just a 20-foot restriction, 10 feet on either side of the pipeline center line, but they can do row crops and field crops within the entire permanent easement.
Okay, so therefore, the assertion that having a pipeline go across like these parcels up here that our last witness pointed to would somehow divide it up into additional pieces just doesn't square with the facts, which is that once it's buttoned back up, those acreages, those fields could continue to be cultivated and farmed in the future just like they are during the present, with the obvious exception during the construction phase.
Correct, except for orchards.
Is that correct?
Yeah, except for trees and vines.
Okay, now the other issue that's been raised by a couple of witnesses so far is this issue about the organic farms, somehow implying that there's a greater impact potentially to organic farmers than there might be to non-organic or traditional farmers. What am I missing there? Because I don't see any difference.
There is no difference. We're just saying it would create a potential high consequence area because of the number of people that congregate. It's kind of like looking at an individual house or a school site. So there would be, they meet the requirements for a high consequence area, which means they'd be probably at greater risk because there are a greater number of people that congregate there. They're employed there full time. They have a store that people, the public access, uh-huh. Things like that. So compared to another farm that only has seasonal workers and there's just a difference. But
so yeah. The risk is greater because they have more...
The potential for risk is greater.
The potential for risk is greater because there are more human operations going on there on a daily basis. Is that right?
Correct. A certain number of people a certain time. A certain number of days.
How does that affect alignment and depth of the pipeline? How is that taken into consideration?
Mostly the regulations call for, I don't know if you can help me with this, but they call for not necessarily increased depth, but maybe increased thickness of pipeline. Certain things have to be done when there's a high consequence area, which some of these pipelines, if they're in a class 3 area, where there's a lot of development, in the east and near in Placer County, those would be considered high consequence areas as well. And so there's just certain regulations that you have to do certain things with the pipeline, but not necessarily deeper.
Okay. And then there was also testimony about the irrigation water under surface irrigation moving from north to south. Is the level of these fields going to be permanently altered by the installation of these pipelines?
There may be some impacts, but I think PG&E is going to work with some of those irrigation facilities, and they can either put them back on top or they can somehow reroute them.
What I want to know is, and maybe this question's more better appropriately addressed to another party, but I'm quite familiar with agriculture, so if they're pulling their ditch at the north end of the field and using furrow irrigation run to the south end, I want to know if after these pipelines are installed 5 feet underground, it's going to impact the level of the field, so are they no longer going to be able to irrigate from north to south? Is there somebody here that can address that point? Because that was been raised by at least one witness.
I think the PG&E reps are here, and they have, of course, much finer engineering already accomplished than we have, but I think the answer is no, it won't affect it, but it might be appropriate to ask them.
Okay, well, we don't have to do that now, Mr. Chairman, but I just I want to make sure as these points are raised that we have an opportunity to talk about them, because that really would be an extreme burden to place on a farmer if they had to then come in and change their method of irrigation because the level of their field had been altered somehow. Those are the only questions I have at this point.
Thank you, Tom. Okay. Nora Paul.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time, Mr. Commissioner. My words to you is this. Let's put this into your own feet. You work all your life, you own a little piece of property, and now this big PG&E come over and put the pipe through it. Ruin your plan. You cannot build anything. And I just put this into you. What do you think? What do you feel? When they give you price of 5% of you just pay for. And I owned this property about 4 years ago on County Road 17. That's what they did to me. And I would like you to consider if this were your property, what do you think? Thank you.
Thank you. We have Paul Thompson, followed by Kenneth Denig.
Good afternoon. Paul Thompson, Deputy Planning Director with Placer County's Planning Department. On behalf of Placer County, we appreciate your staff's effort to assure that the proposed PG&E line 407 to be located within Baseline Road will be compatible with our existing and future underground utilities. These utilities will be required to serve the needs of Placer County's existing and growing communities. Due to the potential significant health and safety risks to our employees and residents that could occur when the underground utilities are maintained or installed near the high-pressure gas line, the county needs to be assured that our existing and future utilities can be adequately planned and constructed without any conflict or risk from the location of the line to 407 within Baseline Road. Accordingly, mitigation measure LU1D is essential to providing these protections for the public health and safety of our county's employees and residents, and to minimize the potential conflicts of this line with existing and future utilities. Therefore, if the commission elects to approve PG&E application for line 407, we respectfully request that the commission include mitigation measure LU1D as an essential measure to satisfy the requirements of this project. Additionally, Placer County requests that if option L will be analyzed further, that PG&E meet with Placer County, the Center Unified School District, and the City of Roseville prior to commencement of the further analysis on this option. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ken Denio, DF Properties. I just would request one addition to mitigation measure LU-1D, and it has to do with the above ground controls. We've given the jurisdictions the rights over separation requirements, but my property actually is in a high residential area of Roseville where line 407 terminates, and so there are above ground structures, and I would just ask that in that mitigation measure, if you would just add the words with the separation and screening requirements as determined by the local agencies. And that's my comments. Otherwise, I think you've done a good job, Crystal.
Thank you very much. Tim Tarrin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Tim Tarrin. I represent the Placer Vineyards Owners Association, which is a majority of the owners of the Placer Vineyards development you've already heard about. That's about 14,000 future units in Placer County, already approved in 2007. I also represent the Sierra Vista Owners Association, all of the members of that association, which is in the planning stage and scheduled for action by the City of Roseville next year for about 6,500 units within the City of Roseville. And I just want to make, first of all, I do want to say I thank the staff for working with us. We met with them, and they've been very responsive. We very much appreciate that. We had initial concerns about the project upset risk, which were addressed by the revisions to the final EIR, so thankfully that issue has been resolved. That leaves us with just two points, which are that if you choose to proceed with this project, we do ask that you support staff's recommendation on the environmentally superior alternative, and that is to incorporate at a minimum options I and L to address the school separation issues that have already been raised before you, and that's at a minimum. The second was just testified to by Mr. Thompson from Placer County. This is a very important thing for us as well, and one that we shared with staff, and that is the whole issue of separation between existing and future utilities in Baseline Road through Placer County, South Placer County. There's going to be just a whole bunch of pipes underneath the street, big pipes, and sewer, water, drainage, electrical, telecommunications, everything. And the idea of this gas line going through and hopefully will actually precede us because we all need the service. The conflict was a potentially serious one. With mitigation measure LU1D, which gives the local jurisdictions the authority, as we understand it, to decide the final horizontal and vertical separation between the pipeline and these utilities, both existing and future, we think that issue has been adequately addressed. But we wanted to impress upon you the importance of including that mitigation measure and following the staff recommendation in that regard. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes everybody who has signed up to speak. Is there anybody else who would like to speak? And please join us, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Dibble, and I reside on County Road 19 in Esparto. And I'm sitting here, I'm listening to this, and I just have to tell you, it's scary. It's very scary, because we're going to have this great big pipe go through my property for, they said 50 years, and my grandchildren are going to have my property. And I'm wondering, as if this goes, it states in your, all these revisions, that the pipe, if it explodes, you have seconds. We won't be able to get away. And there are so many other concerns that I have. I mean, we have a hawk family that live in my eucalyptus trees. We have pigeons. We have all kinds of wildlife out there. And once you start doing that, it's just tearing up the property. It's tearing up all the nature that's around it. And I realize that just a few acres to someone else is nothing, but that's a lot to us. I mean, this is our future income coming in, and now we're being told that we have to be cautious about what it is that we plant. I mean, pretty soon you're going to go to get something to eat and it's going to cost you a fortune because people going through and they're just tearing up your property. You know, back in the 1800s, people used to come over to your property and you get shot. You mess around with their stuff, you get shot. And now I'm hearing is that this company, PG&E, can just come in and take it. If we don't agree to it, you're just going to take it. What are we doing here? Why are we working so hard for somebody to just go in and just take our property like that? I mean, is that right? I don't understand. I don't understand how we can just sit there and work our lives away for something like this and then just have it taken from us. You know, and then be put in danger. Not just us, but my family, you know, for future. And plus, I mean, that's our future income as well. I mean, this is, we're small. We have 30 acres out there. That's it. I mean, it's a lot to us. But if you start going in and you're telling us what we can do and what we can't do on our own property that we work for generations, I mean, we're the third generation, just in our family, not to mention the family before us. I don't understand where all this is anymore. I don't understand how we got to this, to where people can just come in and take it. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Do we have a representative from PG&E here?
We do.
He left, huh? Did you want to come join us and respond to Tom's comments about?
Hello, my name is Scott Clapp. I'm the responsible engineer for the design of the pipeline, and I believe the question was in regard to irrigation.
Right. There was. Thank you for coming forward. There was a slide earlier that showed, I think it's still up there, that showed agricultural fields, one in particular right there, being bisected from west to east by the pipeline. And there was an issue about the irrigation. I believe their irrigation flows from north to south. So my question is, on this parcel or any other parcels that are being cultivated and will be cultivated in the future, is the drainage characteristics of their property going to be altered in any permanent way that would change the way in which they have to irrigate?
No, sir. As a matter of fact, there are some warranties that will prevent that as well. But the way the pipeline will be constructed is open ditch method. And so there'll be an 8-foot deep ditch. Pipeline will be placed so there'll be 5 feet of cover over the 30-inch diameter pipeline. Then the soil will be recompacted to 85%, and then the top decompacted to try to get it as close as to it was pre-existing before we got there, and then laser leveled. And so there'll
be
options.
It will be laser leveled.
Well, there's options for restoration that either PG&E will do it to pre-existing conditions, or they will compensate the landowners to do that themselves. And they could either hire that done or they could perform that themselves. It's in a damage settlement arrangement that that PG&E does as part of their land acquisition. And there's folks here that are more astute about that than I am.
But once the open ditch construction is buttoned back up, it will be restored to its prior level so that if surface irrigation was being used, say like with furrows, mm-hmm. they can continue to irrigate the same way.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. That's all I needed, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, actually, Ann, can you respond to Ms. Dibble's safety concerns?
Well, there was a risk of upset study that was performed that I think that addresses that in far more detail than I ever could. The pipeline has several design features that are in excess of what the code requires. And I've been involved in this business for 25 years, and this is as close to the state-of-the-art pipeline design facility that I have experienced. So I have a high degree of confidence that the pipeline will perform as designed and very safe in respect to other pipelines.
Okay, thank you.
Could I make a comment to that?
Please.
When this pipeline was first proposed, they sent a geologist. I live just west of Alicia's property. They sent a geologist out, and he informed me that this pipeline was 100% safe. No questions asked. So I asked him, I said, then why don't you just go up to County Road 16 like we proposed? There's one home instead of seven. There's seven homes between 87 and 88A. There is one home on 16. His response was, that's another few thousand feet out of our way, and nothing is 100% safe. So I went on the internet, and I Googled 30 to 36-inch gas line ruptions and explosions. Does anybody have any idea how many there are? There is 22,500 gas line explosions of 30 and 36-inch pipelines that have happened. So if he says it's safe, then the internet must be wrong.
Can I address the irrigation
I was already up once.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Yes. My name is Pat Markham. I'm an attorney, and I represent the Lopezes. And the question you had is a good one regarding the irrigation, because I've dealt with that on past pipeline projects. I worked on the SMUD cogeneration pipeline project. And what you find, and what the farmers and the engineers find, is that for a period of time after it's buttoned up, it will continue to settle. You can re-engineer that, and after probably 4 or 5 years, it will ultimately get to a place where it's not going to settle any further. But you still have an additional question that will arise, and that is sinkholes that are caused by water percolating under the pipeline area, and it could drop that particular area down there. So in response to your question, my concern, there's two concerns, and I think it really goes along with Ms. Stevens' comments, and that's this, is you've got a family farm that is being cut in half. During the construction period, essentially you cut off harvesting rows and irrigation if the irrigation is going in the direction against the cut. One of the problems is I just finished a case recently where they offered $40,000 in compensation on a pipeline project. It was the Northwest Interceptor. The agency ended up paying $640,000 on that project, on that particular segment. The reason I bring that up is because it took 4 years to get there. And the concern I have is while these farmers lose their crop for that particular year, in 4 years, they may be compensated, but by then they've lost their farm. And so what the alternative that Ms. Stevens is talking about, and that is going around Road 16, avoids a farm. It's very critical that these farms not be bisected. That is the most important thing in terms of impacting all of these farmers. And we look at it from a corporate perspective, the larger dollar perspective, but you need to look at it from the individual perspective, which is their farms are gone. And compensating them really doesn't do them any good.
Who says it doesn't do any good? Your punchline was, and so-and-so says it doesn't do
no,
any good.
No, and I said, me. In other words, if I'm a family farmer and I've been doing it for 50 years, and you pay me, let's say, $100,000 for my farm, I'm not happy. I'm not farming. I don't have a way to make an income. That's my point.
Thank you.
But yeah, so thank you.
Okay. Any comments, questions by board members? Is there a motion?
I'd like to hear from staff about we heard repeatedly about options I and L. Have those been incorporated into the staff's recommendation?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're the fifth item on the CEQA certification.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to support the staff's recommendation first on the CEQA. We vote on the CEQA first.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Without objection, motion passes. Next item.
And then on the main item, the staff recommendation has incorporated options I and L, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I would move approval of the staff recommendation.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Without objection, motion passes.
That concludes today's meeting. We have no other items before the commission, and our next commission meeting is December 17th in San Diego.
Actually, we have one additional public comment. Steve Mathier. Is Steve still here? I guess
he's
not.
He's coming up right now. He's with AGP that runs the webcast for us.
Okay. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Steve Matthew, AGP Video, and I just wanted to take the opportunity, since it's the first time that I've been able to personally be at the meeting since staff and commission gave us the contract, and I want to thank you for your forward thinking and moving into the 21st century with your recordation methodologies and outreach through the services that we provide. And I didn't want you to think that I was one of these CEOs that just came in and dazzled you for two meetings and then ran away. So it's just that we're racking them, stacking them so heavy now that we're doing three or four, five statewide all at the same time, and I have to move around from agency to agency. So, again, thank you, staff and commission, for making the decision to move forward and let us provide our services to you.
Thank you,
staff. And the general public of California.
Thank you. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned. I think I'm going to stop off some of this before going to the meeting.
Too long? I'm going to sit here and sit on the door?
No. Is it okay?
God, my heart is tearing out.
I wish PG&E was more generous.
You can't.
It's coming down.